My reading this morning is called Spring, and yes, I know it's not spring yet, but I love this poem, and I couldn't wait till spring to share it. It's a Mary Oliver poem, and I will read it to you now. Somewhere, a black bear has just risen from sleep and is staring down the mountain. All night, in the brisk and shallow restlessness of spring, I think of her, her four black fists flicking the gravel, her red tongue touching the grass, the cold water. There is only one question, how to love this world. I think of her rising like a black and leafy ledge to sharpen her claws against the silence of the trees. Whatever else my life is, with its poems and its music and its glass cities, it is also this dazzling darkness coming down the mountain, breathing and tasting. All day I think of her, her white teeth, her wordlessness, her perfect love. On election day, I was in New Hampshire with Howard, our senior minister, and Beth, our music director. We felt full of hope and optimism as we gathered with many other cheerful folks as we received our list of people whose doors we were knocking on to get out the vote. It was sunny and warm for November, and we laughed as we walked those quiet streets. And I reflected on the long journey women had taken to this place, all the women who had spent their lives working for the vote and for equal rights, and now a woman president. I felt a sense of freedom and excitement and pride in our country. We had broken the race barrier when we elected President Obama, and now I thought we can break a gender barrier with our first woman president. We were so confident that day. And then I woke up. The next day, I really did want to curl up into a ball and put the covers over my head and cry, which I may have done. But among all the many feelings and thoughts, I noticed that I also felt betrayed as a woman. I had come to believe that our country was evolved enough to elect a woman president. I thought our country was smart enough and grown up enough to elect the candidate with experience and qualifications over the candidate with no political or leadership experience. I trusted that we would elect the candidate who wanted to include and care for all members of our nation over the candidate who had been very outspoken against many, including people of color, immigrants, LGBTQ people, Muslims, women. Instead of this person with over 30 years of political experience who had been Secretary of State, State Senator, a law school grad, congressional legal counsel, who also happens to be a woman, instead we elected Donald Trump. This is the man that we elected instead of a woman. I was very disappointed in this country, and afterwards, listening to the analysis of the election results and the divisions in this country between conservatives and liberals and coasters and mid-Americans, I also felt disappointed in myself. Living in my liberal bubble where I see all around me equality and non-typical gender roles in my families, in this church, in my community, I forget that women are still not treated fairly. I'm going to give you a little bit of statistics, bear with me. According to the Institute for Women's Policy Research, in this country, women are about half of the workforce. They receive more college and graduate degrees than men, yet on average, women still continue to earn 80 cents for every dollar earned by a man, which is a gender wage gap of 20%. Women of color fare much worse. If current trends continue, Hispanic women will wait 232 years for equal pay, and black women 108 years for equal pay. The poverty rate for working women would be cut in half if women were paid the same as comparable men. The current federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. Two-thirds of minimum wage workers are women. 43 years after Roe versus Wade, a conservative seat on a Supreme Court could overturn that ruling. And as you may know, there are plans in this legislature to defund Planned Parenthood and to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Being the child-bearing people of our species, women have a whole set of health needs and choices to be considered, including contraception, reproduction, pre- and postnatal care, and the care and protection of their children. In 2016, over 7 million women received health insurance through the Affordable Care Act. According to the United Nations, worldwide, 35% of women in the world have experienced physical or sexual violence, and an estimated 133 million girls and women have experienced some form of genital mutilation. Also, according to the UN, the vast majority of humans sold or traded in trafficking, 71%, are women and girls. Former UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says the statistics almost defy belief. What is hard to understand is why the world denies itself the fruits of women's full participation, end quote. Full participation, that is what I want for women and for this world. I want opportunities for full participation in creating a world with equal wages and equal access to health care and education, a world that is safe for women, where the choices women make about their bodies, their minds, their reproduction, and their lives are their own, where women can be full political participants, where they see qualified candidates, regardless of their gender, chosen as leaders. This is what I want for our girls and our boys. I hadn't been here at First Parish very long. I'd preached two sermons, created those worship services with such earnestness, weaving together the parts with intentionality of love and inspiration and self-reflection in my own way, held gently in my hands and my heart. When Howard, our senior minister, said, "You have the loving, gentle presence of a minister down, but," he said, "but we need to find the fierce Jan this year." Dang. He said that what is comfortable can be a shield to hide behind, and am I willing to lower my shield, feel my discomfort, and find my edge? Can I find my own fierceness? Well, some specific seminary students came to mind when Howard said fierce and edgy. I thought angry and sharp. Those preachers had left me feeling scolded, lazy, uncool, incapable, less than, and utterly alone. And I didn't want to be that preacher. I was afraid. I didn't know what fierce Jan would say. I didn't know how fierce Jan could be a minister. And I knew the truth in Howard's words. There is a strong, empowered, fierce minister whose voice I have ignored in favor of what came more naturally and more easily and more gently. Howard's challenge did elicit an excitement in me to search for and find the full spectrum of my voice. I want to find fierce Jan, and I want to see what makes her heart race. What does she sharpen her claws on? What causes those white teeth to flash in the dazzling darkness? For what will she come down the mountain? It didn't take long with these questions to realize that the fiercest Jan is the mama bear, the ferocious protector of her cub. I am a gentle, berry-eating, log-poking, grub-seeking mammal until my child is threatened. And then I am a raging, claw-fisted, sharp-toothed, fire-tongued beast. Many of you can relate. Well, my daughter, who's here today, is 25, and she doesn't need me to protect her. She doesn't need me to carry her on my back. But I'm wondering if she might need me to put that fierce mama bear energy into securing and protecting her rights and those of her generation and those of her children and on and on. This ferocity to make a better, safer, saner, more equal, accepting, inviting world for women does not leave men and boys out. I want gender equality for our daughters. I want it for our sons and everything in between. Because equality is good for all of us. This call to find our own fierceness to fight for and preserve rights for women is for all of us who care about equality and justice. And as you use, it is our principles and our theology that call us to affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person and to promote world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. In searching out my own fierceness, I realize that it comes actually from love. And I wonder how I can love this world with all of its ugliness and messiness, and especially for the ways that we do not care for each other, do not feed and house and clothe and teach and heal and empower all of its inhabitants, for the ways we belittle and shame and make some people less than others, for the things happening that are just not right. We hear hard truths every day in the news. We read about the injustices done locally, nationally, and throughout the world. We hear every story of every broken human being. But these stories don't tell us what to do with the outrage we feel at the injustices and the unfairness. And we don't know what to do with the deep, deep sadness at the state of this world. We take it on and we add another burden to our heavily laden shoulders and we tell ourselves, this is life. And we steel ourselves for yet another awful happening, another tragedy, another injustice. We listen to the news and they tell us this is all there is. But here, in this place, and in the church down the street, and in the synagogue in the next town, and all over the country, we come together because we know there is more. There is goodness and decency and kindness and fairness, and especially there is a way of living that has God in it. For me, God is synonymous with love, and love is right here. Our hearts wouldn't be so broken and heavy if they weren't so full of love. For this world and its inhabitants, we care. We're meant to care. That love, that spirit of life lives in us, connects us to each other and empowers us and gives us hope and allows us to keep dreaming of a better world with less suffering and more compassion. And dreaming the world allows us to create the world. One conversation at a time, one hug, one smile, one speaking up for someone, one letter, one phone call, one speaking up for ourselves, one march, one voice joined with thousands to say, this isn't right. We demand change. We demand equality. And we demand that this world we are trying so hard to love is cared for. We demand that this place where we raise our children and teach them how to be good citizens of the world is worth loving. And like a fierce bear, we feel the strong, ingrained need to protect what is ours, our world, this world. How do we harness the energy of all that power, massive muscle, sharp claws, white teeth, without ripping someone else to shreds, without making someone else the enemy, or the perpetrator, the bad guy, the buffoon, the victim, the other? I believe that God lives in every person. Love lives in every person. How can I see that spark deep inside someone who doesn't exhibit that love? How do I stand up to them and also love them? These are the questions that guide people of faith. How do we access the ferociousness of the bear's perfect love and use it to change the world? How do we hold the dream of a just world? Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "If you lose hope, somehow you lose the vitality that keeps life moving. You lose the courage to be, that quality that helps you go on in spite of it all. And so today I still have a dream," he said. Reverend Dr. King encouraged the world and encourages us still through his words to keep working to create that world he dreamed. There is working hard, tirelessly, to create the world we want our children to live in, and at the opposite extreme there is hiding and waiting for it all to go away. But there's a balance somewhere in the middle between burnout and no progress. There will be times when we fight, and there will be times when we take a break for a bit while we rest and feed our spirits. We need to fortify ourselves with working and praying, marching and singing. We need to strengthen our spirits so that they are healthy and vigorous for the work ahead. We need to learn what makes our spirits sing and do it. We need to go and spend time in the places where we find God. We need to replenish our inner selves, because there is a question living in our broken, loving hearts. It is the question our lives will answer, the question, how do we love this world, our world? How do we love this world? So may it be.